just before we sat down, Kathleen mentioned one of the chants that we do when we have a ceremony, when we have a service. And it's called the Enmei Juko Kanen Gyo. And she said she didn't know what it meant, but that she liked the energy of it, right? Something like that, yeah. And it's interesting with that chant because there are several translations floating around of what that means, what the chant means. But I've never heard of a Zen group that chants it in translation. It's always chanted in the Japanese, which is probably a version of what was chanted in China. And maybe Sanskrit originally, I don't know. Because the translations never really quite do it, I think. So we stay with the original, and it doesn't matter actually if we understand the chant, what's being said. I think there's several people in this room who have been chanting that for years and years and years and years and have no idea what it means, right?
I've seen the translation.
No, you don't know. No. A couple of elements that are really interesting, though, and that have to do with the fact that we don't need to understand the words so much. So, Kanzeon is the Japanese, one of the Japanese names for the Buddha of Compassion, Avalokiteshvara, in India, Avalokiteshvara. And this is the ultimate bodhisattva in our tradition, is the Buddha of Compassion. It's the archetype of what we are seeking to attain, if we're seeking to attain anything, right? And this chant is something along the lines of the mind of Kanzeon in the morning, the mind of Kanzeon in the night, the mind of Kanzeon always, the mind of Kanzeon, the mind of Kanzeon, the mind of Kanzeon, kind of repetitive, something like that. We seek to maintain the mind of Kanzeon in the morning, whatever, in the evening, whatever. Seeking to maintain the mind of Kanzeon, whatever. And this is why we say this chant when we want to help someone, when we want to, when we're thinking of others in the service. And Kathleen said that it brought me to what someone recently asked me, what I do when I'm sitting in my meditation. What do you do? And my reaction immediately is, well, I don't do anything. But that's kind of the smart response, kind of, because it's true and it's not true. And so the discussion continued, and the question was, well, if we don't do anything, if there's no effort, if we don't bring our attention to something, that's not it. But if we do something, if we make an effort, if we put our attention, we try to focus, try to grasp or something, that's not it either. So we have this situation of it's not this and it's not this. So what do we do? And I said, it's true, this is our dilemma in the practice, right? Not only in practice, but in life. So in this, if we use the example of the chant, if we try to understand all of the words and understand what is being said, and as we're chanting, we're thinking about what it means and what the implications of that are, and if it's possible or not, we're not fully in the chant, we're not fully chanting. Right? On the other hand, if we're not paying any attention, it could just be any old syllables, and we don't really care what it sounds like, what it feels like, what's being said, what everybody else is doing. That's not it either. We're not fully in the chant as well. So what do we do? Sometimes it helps to understand what we're chanting. It helps us to feel more involved in the chant. If we know, we know that this means maintaining the mind of Kanzion or the Bodhisattva in the morning, maintaining in the afternoon, seeking the mind of the Bodhisattva, acting with the mind of the Bodhisattva, whatever. That might help us. It might also take us away. If we don't know, that might free us from our attachments to what the idea is and what it means and seeking a meaning or something, and we can just give ourselves to it entirely, which is, you know, in what Kathleen said, there's an element of that. She doesn't know what it says, but there's something energetically about it that appeals to her, that she likes. And that's often what happens with that chant or other chants, if we give ourselves to it completely, right? If we put ourselves completely into it. And the same goes with all of life and everything we do, think, say, do, believe, everything. On Saturday, I talked about, I mentioned Joshu, and one of the famous stories of he and his master, his teacher, I forget exactly how it's phrased, but he comes to his teacher and he says basically, How can I attain the way, or some sort of Zen term for how can I see it? How can I experience that everyone's always talking about, of when the duality has been seen through? How can I do that? And his teacher responds, if you go towards it, you're going away from it. So if you're focusing, trying, pushing, looking ahead, trying to arrive, you're going away from it. So Joshua says, well, okay, then what if I make no effort? I can't remember the exact wording, but this is the idea for it. What if I make no effort? And his teacher says something to the effect of, then that's blindness or ignorance. Meaning, I don't want to see, I'm not even going to try. Just fumble along, right? No effort. Not going to make any attempt to concentrate, no attempt to do anything, I'm just going to sit here. If we applied that to our sitting practice, say, because that's what he's talking about. He's basically saying to his teacher, well, what should I do when I sit? Should I be focusing on it? Should I be working really hard, making a big effort to see something? Or should I be just sitting there? And the teacher basically is saying to him, if you go towards it, if you're making a big effort, you're going away from it. If you don't make any effort at all, blindness. And we can see this in our practice, right? We have moments when we're just sitting here and, you know, it's like nothing's going on and our mind is all over the place and, you know, we're like tapping our foot, we're waiting for the next thing to happen. We don't even realize it, you know. Or, you know, we're like scratching our face. And even if we're not physically doing it, we're thinking it. This is like the blindness mode, okay? Other moments we're really trying to concentrate and catch it, see it, figure it out, get to the bottom of it. Or that can translate into, I'm not seeing it, I'm not getting it, other people are getting it, I'm not, this is bad, I'm not good at this, whatever it is. Then we're in the other mode. Too much of it. So what do we do? It's interesting to try both. Experiment, see what happens. It's interesting to try not to become stuck in one or the other. So if we find ourselves like tapping feet and drifting off and, you know, falling asleep or whatever, come back and say, okay, wait a minute, what am I doing here? And maybe then focus on trying to make the effort. But if we find ourselves like super intense effort, pushing, maybe stop and take a break. See what you're doing. See what's happening. So this person who was talking with us about said something like, well, if... if I'm thinking about it, you know, if I'm thinking, okay, I'm bringing my attention to this moment and I'm thinking about the moment, then I'm not really one with the moment because I'm thinking about the moment. He was asking this question, which is true. So what do? It's like you're observing yourself being in the moment. So what do? This is kind of a self-conscious cycle that we fall into. And does it matter? You know, what is it important that we're observing ourselves? Is it important not to observe ourselves? These are all questions we can be asking. And observing that we have these questions. All important, valid issues. But if we bring it back to this little anecdote about the chant, it reminds me of many, many, many years ago when I was at a Sesshin retreat in Poland. And the chanting was done in Polish. All of the chants had been translated into Polish. And so I couldn't understand. So either they were in Japanese, like that one, or they were in Polish. So I didn't understand any of the chanting ever. And I'd done a bit of sesshins before, so I knew basically what ceremonies were, but I hadn't been doing this for very long. It was probably like the first year of my practice. And at the in those days, our group, my teacher's group, we did three ceremonies a day. So we did one in the morning, one at lunchtime, and one at dinner time. We don't do that anymore, but that's what we used to do. And at lunchtime was always the Heart Sutra that was chanted. In the morning, it was chanted in Japanese, the Heart Sutra, so the Hana Shingyo, as we called it in Japanese. And at lunchtime, it was chanted in France, we chanted it in French. In England or other places, we chanted it in English. And in Poland, they chanted it in Polish. So here we were chanting the Heart Sutra in Polish. Even looking at it written, I didn't know how to pronounce it. And huge, I think there were about 100 people in this place. And I happened to be sitting where I could see the woman who was doing the makugyo, who was doing the drum. And so it was, like the equivalent of but it was in Polish, right? She was doing it. And she, I tell you, I was just, my heart was blown open by this one. I didn't know what anybody was saying, but everybody was doing it completely, or I felt like they were. And she was she had her eyes closed and her head thrown back, and she was just doing it and chanting and chanting and chanting. Smile on her face with the head thrown back, chanting, pounding. Wow. She took me with her. Totally. I don't think I've really ever experienced the Heart Sutra like that. I've had different experiences with it, but that was something so special. Partly because I couldn't understand what was being said. And I couldn't even chant myself. But I was ripe for that. I was open to whatever it was. And it was as if I didn't need to chant. The experience of her was enough for me. So, what does any of that have to do with us here and now? I guess, it's that this practice, ultimately that's what it's about, is giving yourself completely to it, Whatever it is. Whatever it is, whatever presents itself, give yourself. And we can't know what that means ahead of time. It changes in every situation, in every moment. And even the same, giving yourself completely to someone who asks you for directions in the street, one day might mean one thing. And the next day, someone asking you for the directions in the street might mean something else. We don't know what it means giving ourselves completely to the situation until the situation presents itself. It has to do that's not what I mean. The issues that we're confronted with, you know, because of the current events now, since the Charlie Hebdo thing, but it's even before that, we find ourselves in a situation every moment where this applies. Okay, so when we talk about freedom of speech, this applies. When we talk about tolerance, when we talk about respect, justice, differences, similarities, nationalities, religions, beliefs, law, this applies. Because ultimately everything comes back to the same point. You know, we have this initial point where there's some dissatisfaction, some sort of malaise in our being, we sense. We look into it and we discover that there's a cause to that, for that. What is causing it? We look into that. We look into that cause and we discover that there is a way to stop that, to put an end to that malaise that we experience. And we discover what that way is to put an end to it. That those four points apply always. So, in any situation, when we find ourselves not feeling right, we can ask ourselves those same questions. And it comes back to, okay, in this moment, I give myself completely to this moment. But giving myself completely to this moment means I have to let go of the myself from the previous moment or from the moment to come. I have to just stay with what it is now, with who I am in this moment. And that who I am changes all the time. That's one of the first points that we discover. Right? We see that the cause of our discomfort is because we have an idea of who this is and we want it to maintain that. And maintaining that implies basically rejecting what doesn't help us maintain it or grasping what we think helps us maintain it. That means attacking people who we feel does not help us maintain that identity. Or that means clinging to people, things, places, ideas that do help us maintain that identity. Ultimately, we could say, okay, well then I'm going to give myself completely to maintaining that identity. What happens if I am one with maintaining that identity? What happens then, we could say? If we did that, there would no longer be any identity to maintain. So, whatever you want to give yourself to, entirely, you if you do it entirely, the separation will be eliminated. Okay. So it can be chanting words you don't know. Kanzeyona Butsuyo Butsuyo Butsu and Bu Po. Or it can be words that you do know, you know. Avalokiteshvara se nourrit dans le cours profond de la Prajnaparamita. Okay, we don't know. You can say, well, I don't know what Prajnaparamita is. Well, basically, Prajnaparamita is the wisdom that arises from being one with things. Seeing the oneness is the wisdom that arises from that. So he's, Avalokiteshvara is swimming in the deep current of that. And he sees that form is emptiness and emptiness is form. And he sees the oneness of all things, you know. Sometimes we chant it and we hear those words. Maybe we don't even know what they mean. No. But we chant them. Sometimes we don't know what they mean. Even when we don't understand the words. Sometimes we when we don't understand the words, we chant it and we do know what it means. Something happens for us. So, that's what the practice is about. Anything else is, I don't know, accidental fruit or something, you know? Feeling of well-being, relaxation, peace, all that, it's, you know, okay. It's fruit, but that's kind of accidental, because that's not really what it's about. Any questions, comments? Experiences to share? Or
I read something recently. It was something, I only read it once, so I don't remember the whole thing, but it was something to the effect that if you resist something, you become the resistance. And then it went on with a few other things, but that was the first one, and that's the one that I remembered. And then, you know, around about the same time as I read this, I was speaking to a woman I know, and I went to her house for the first time, and we were talking about housework, and she said, which I loathe, which I do as little of as possible, and I've got a cleaning lady, and I think about this resistance thing as well. And she said that she had bought this book called something like, you know, Zen in a Menage or something, which she had read, and she said since she had read that book, housework had become something that she did with, she was completely in the moment. So, and I was sort of saying, like, even cleaning the toilet? And she said, yes. And I said, oh, you're a lot more Zen than me, you know, because I certainly am nowhere near that. And so when you were talking, I was thinking about it, I was thinking about those two things. I was listening to what you were saying, but I was, you know, you always try to connect it to something that has, that you've been thinking about anyway, and that's what came up for me thinking about this. She's not striving to be in the moment. She's just read this thing that's meant something to her, and so she's in the moment when she's doing her housework, and she's not thinking about, you know, she's doing all of this ironing. It's all piling up, and it's wonderful. She's just doing it. And not resisting it, whereas I resist it. I resist it. I resist it. I said, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do this. I won't do it. Pay somebody else to do it. So that's what came up for me.
Yeah, I mean, that's the kind of traditional thing we hear about Zen is, you know, carrying water, chopping wood. When you cut carrots, you just cut carrots.
Yeah, I can do the carrots. It's just I can't clean the toilet.
But the same thing applies to the toilets, right?
Yeah, yeah, that's right. I can do it with the carrots. I'm very selective. And there's a problem there.
It's true, huh? You know, it's true. I think the same session when I said in Poland when I was, that woman was chanting, my Samu job, we didn't get a choice. They just assigned us to work tasks. And mine was cleaning toilets and bathroom areas, mm-hmm. so there were showers and toilets. And it was in bad condition, the bathroom, whatever. And so the wall was like crumbling. Mm. So there was, and everything was always damp. So there was no way to really ever have it be clean, because every time you cleaned it or something, the wall would crumble more, and so then it was dirty again. So it was this endless task of impossible. It was an impossibly endless task, which was interesting because it was no longer about making the toilet clean and not liking anything. It was just, okay, well, let's do it. You know, what's that going to do? It helps when you don't have a choice. You know, if they just say to you, okay, this is what you're doing. You can't volunteer and say, oh, I'm in the kitchen.
You can still be resisting it all Absolutely. The time you're doing, because yeah. I have experienced that.
Absolutely.
Resisting it the whole way.
Yep, absolutely. And that's what causes
and
pain.
And not being in the moment. And
that's what causes pain. And that's the story of our being.
Yeah.
We resist, and therefore we suffer.
Yeah.
Sure. Question. When we are doing meditation, it would be effective if we not think, concentrate on our breathing in order to avoid to not effortless or to more be focused. Do you think it would be fine? Because okay. I'm trying to do this way, just focusing on my breathing.
That's why we give that technique,
yeah,
is to help us not be carried away by our thoughts. Sometimes what happens, though, is we then become focused on the breathing and we become attached to that. Or we focus on the breathing and at the same time, our mind is also thinking about something else. And if that's the case, well, then when we become aware that we're thinking about something else, we just come back to it. Yeah, that's exactly what those techniques are for. Okay. Give me a chance and then
sont les êtres vivants, les faits de vous.